the funeral, and no one was going to bother translating it for me today. It didn't matter. Still taking in the beauty of my surroundings, I found my mind wandering. To the left of the altar, a golden-haired angel looked at me from a 4-foot-tall icon. An unexpected memory came to me. Dimitri had once gotten permission for me to accompany him on a quick weekend trip to Idaho to meet with some other guardians. Idaho wasn't any place I was keen on going, but I welcomed the time with him, and he'd convinced school officials that it was a learning experience. That had been shortly after Mason's death, and after the shockwave that tragedy had sent through the school, I think they would have allowed me anything, to be honest. Unfortunately, there was little that was leisurely or romantic about the trip. Dimitri had a job to do, and he had to do it quickly. So we made the best time we could, stopping only when absolutely necessary. Considering our last road trip had involved us stumbling onto a Moroi massacre, this one being uneventful was probably for the best. As usual, he wouldn't let me drive, despite my claims that I could get us there in half the time. Or maybe that was why he wouldn't let me drive. We stopped at one point to get gas and scrounge some food from the station store. We were up in the mountains somewhere, in a tiny town that rivaled St. Vladimir's for remote location. I could see mountains on clear days at school, but it was a totally different experience being in them. They surrounded us, and were so close it seemed like you could just jump over and land on one. Dimitri was finishing up with the car. Holding my sub sandwich, I walked around to the back of the gas station to get a better view. Whatever civilization the gas station offered disappeared as soon as I cleared it. Endless snowy pines stretched out before me, and all was still and quiet, save for the distant sound of the highway behind me. My heart ached over what had happened to Mason, and I was still having nightmares about the Shigoi who'd held us captive. That pain was a long way from disappearing, but something about this peaceful setting soothed me for a moment. Looking down at the unbroken foot-high snow, a crazy thought suddenly came to me. I let myself go, falling back first to the ground. The thick snow embraced me, and I rested there for a moment, taking comfort in lying down. Then I moved my legs and arms back and forth, carving out new hollows in the snow. When I finished, I didn't get up right away. I simply continued lounging, staring up at the blue, blue sky.
"What?" asked Dimitri. "Are you doing, aside from getting your sandwich cold?"
His shadow fell over me and I looked up at his tall form. In spite of the cold, the sun was out, and its rays backlit his hair. He could have been an angel himself, I thought.
"I'm making a snow angel," I replied. "Don't you know what that is?"
"Yes, I know, but why? You must be freezing."
I had on a heavy winter coat, hat, gloves, and all the other requisite cold weather accessories. He was right about the sandwich. "Not so much, actually. My face is a little, I guess." He shook his head and gave me a wry smile.
"You'll be cold when you're in the car and all that snow starts melting."
"I think you're more worried about the car than about me," he laughed.
"I'm more worried about you getting hypothermia."
"And this? This is nothing." I patted the ground beside me. "Come on, you make one too, and then we can go." He continued looking down at me.
"So I can freeze too?"
"So you can have fun, so you can leave your mark on Idaho. Besides, it shouldn't bother you at all, right? Don't you have some sort of super cold resistance from Siberia?" He sighed, a smile still on his lips. It was enough to warm me even in this weather.
"There you go again, convinced Siberia is like Antarctica. I'm from the southern part. The weather is almost the same as here."
"You're making excuses," I told him. "Unless you want to drag me back to the car, you're going to have to make an angel too." Dimitri studied me for several heavy moments, and I thought he might actually haul me away. His face was still light and open, though, and his expression was filled with a fondness that made my heart race. Then, without warning, he flopped under the snow beside me, lying there quietly. "Okay," I said when he did nothing more. "Now you have to move your arms and legs."
"I know how to make a snow angel."
"Then do it. Otherwise, you're more like a chalk outline at a police crime scene." He laughed again, and the sound was rich and warm in the still air. Finally, after a little more coaxing on my part,
He moved his arms and legs too, making an angel of his own. When he finished, I expected him to jump up and demand we get back on the road. But instead, he stayed there too, watching the sky and the mountains. "Pretty, huh?" I asked. My breath made frosty clouds in the air. I guess in some ways it's not that different from the ski resort's view. But I don't know. I feel different about it all today.
"Life's like that," he said. "As we grow and change, sometimes things we've experienced before take on new meaning. It'll happen for the rest of your life."
I started to tease him about his tendency to always deliver these profound life lessons, but it occurred to me then that he was right. When I'd first begun falling for Dimitri, the feelings had been all-consuming. I'd never felt anything like it before. I'd been convinced there was no possible way I could love him more. But now, after what I'd witnessed with Mason and the Strigoi, things were different. I did love Dimitri more intensely. I loved him in a different way, in a deeper way. Something about seeing how fragile life was made me appreciate him more. It had made me realize how much he meant to me and how sad I'd be if I ever lost him. "You think it'd be nice to have a cabin up there?" I asked, pointing to a nearby peak. "Out in the woods where no one could find you."
"I would think it was nice. I think you'd be bored."
I tried to imagine being stuck in the wilderness with him. Small room, fireplace, bed. I didn't think it would be that boring. It wouldn't be so bad if we had cable and internet. And body heat.
"Oh, Rose."
He didn't laugh, but I could tell he was smiling again.
"I don't think you'd ever be happy someplace quiet. You'll always need something to do."
"Are you saying I have a short attention span?"
"Not at all. I'm saying there's a fire in you that drives everything you do, that makes you need to better the world and those you love. To stand up for those who can't. It's one of the wonderful things about you."
"Only one, huh?" I spoke lightly, but his words had thrilled me. He'd meant what he said about thinking those were wonderful traits, and feeling his pride in me meant more than anything just then.
"One of many," he said.
He sat up and looked down at me.
"So no peaceful cabin for you. Not until you're an old, old woman."
"What, like 40? He shook his head in exasperation and stood up, not gracing my joke with a response. Still, he regarded me with the same affection I'd heard in his voice. There was admiration, too, and I thought I could never be unhappy as long as Dimitri thought I was wonderful and beautiful. Leaning down, he extended his hand.
"Time to go."
I took it, letting him help pull me up. Once standing, we held hands for a heartbeat longer than necessary. Then we let go and surveyed our work. Two perfect snow angels, one much, much taller than the other. Careful to step inside each outline, I leaned down and hacked out a horizontal line above each head.
"What's that?"
he asked when I stood beside him again. "Halos," I said with a grin, "for heavenly creatures like us."
"That might be a stretch."
We studied our angels for a few moments more, looking at where we had lain side by side in that sweet, quiet moment. I wished what I'd said was true, that we had truly left our mark on the mountain. But I knew that after the next snowfall, our angels would disappear into the whiteness and be nothing more than a memory. Dimitri touched my arm gently, and without another word, we turned around and headed back to the car. Compared to that memory of him and the way he'd looked at me out there on the mountain, I thought the angel looking back at me in church seemed pale and boring in comparison. No offense to her. The congregation was filing back to their seats after taking bread and wine. I'd stayed seated for that, but I did understand a few of the priest's words. Life, death, destroy, eternal. I knew enough about all this to string together the meaning. I would have bet good money resurrection was in there too. I sighed, wishing it were truly that easy to vanquish death and bring back those we loved. Church ended and I left with the Belikovs, feeling melancholy. As people passed each other near the entrance, I saw some eggs being exchanged. Victoria had explained that it was a big tradition around here. A few people I didn't know gave some to me, and I felt a little bad that I had nothing to give in return. I also wondered how I was going to eat them all. They were decorated in various ways. Some were simply colored, others were elaborately designed. Everyone seemed chatty after church, and we all stood around outside it. Friends and family hugged and caught up on gossip. I stood near Victoria, smiling and trying to follow the conversation that often took place in both English and Russian.
Victoria!
We turned and saw Nikolai striding toward us. He gave us, by which I mean he gave her, a brilliant smile. He dressed up for the holiday and looked amazing in a sage shirt and dark green tie. I eyed Victoria, wondering if it had any effect on her. Nope. Her smile was polite, genuinely happy to see him, but there was nothing romantic there. Again, I wondered about her mystery friend. He had a couple of guys with him whom I'd met before. They greeted me, too. Like the Balakovs, they seemed to think I was a permanent fixture around here.
Are you still going to Marina's party?
Asked Nikolai. I'd nearly forgotten. That was the party he'd invited us to the first day I'd met him. Victoria had accepted then, but to my surprise, she now shook her head.
We can't. We have family plans.
That was news to me. There was a possibility something had come up that I didn't know about yet, but I doubted it. I had a feeling she was lying, and being a loyal friend, I said nothing to contradict her. It was hard watching Nikolai's face fall, though.
Really? We're going to miss you.
She shrugged.
We'll all see each other at school.
He didn't seem pacified by that.
Yeah, but...
Nikolai's eyes suddenly lifted from her face and focused on something behind us. He frowned. Victoria and I both glanced back, and I felt her mood shift too. Three guys were strolling toward my group. They were Dampiers as well. I didn't notice anything unusual about them, smirks aside, but other Dampiers and Moroi gathered outside the church took on expressions similar to those of my companions. Troubled. Worried. Uncomfortable. The three guys came to a stop by us, pushing their way into our circle.
I thought you might be here, Kolya,
said one. He spoke in perfect English, and it took me a moment to realize he was talking to Nikolai. I would never understand Russian nicknames.
I didn't know you were back, replied Nikolai stiffly.
Studying the two of them, I could see a distinct resemblance. They had the same bronze hair and lean build. Brothers, apparently. Nikolai's brother's gaze fell on me. He brightened.
And you must be the unpromised American girl.
It didn't surprise me that he knew who I was. After the memorial, most of the local Dampiers had left telling tales about the American girl who had fought battles against Strigoi but carried neither a promise mark nor a graduation mark. I'm Rose, I said. I didn't know what was up with these guys, but I certainly wasn't going to show any fear in front of them. The guy seemed to appreciate my confidence and shook my hand.
I'm Dennis, he gestured to his friends. Arthur and Liv.
When did you come to town?
Asked Nikolai, still not looking happy about this reunion.
Just this morning, Dennis turned to Victoria. I heard about your brother. I'm sorry.
Victoria's expression was hard, but she nodded politely.
Thank you.
Is it true he fell defending Moroi?
I didn't like the sneer in Dennis's voice, but it was Carolina who voiced my angry thoughts. I hadn't noticed her approaching our group. She didn't look happy to see Dennis at all.
He fell fighting Strigoi. He died a hero.
Dennis shrugged, unaffected by the angry tone of her voice.
Still makes him dead. I'm sure the Moroi will sing his name for years to come.
They will, I replied. He saved a whole group of them, and Dampiers too. Dennis's gaze fell back on me, his eyes thoughtful as he studied my face for a few seconds.
I heard you were there too, that both of you were sent into an impossible battle.
It wasn't impossible. We won.
Would Dmitri say that if he were alive?
Carolina crossed her arms over her chest.
If you're only here to start something, then you should leave. This is a church.
It was funny. Upon meeting her, I thought she seemed so gentle and kind. Just an ordinary young mother working to support her family. But in this moment, she seemed more like Dmitri than ever. I could see that same strength within her, that fierceness that drove her to protect loved ones and stand up to her enemies. Not that these guys were her enemies, exactly. I honestly didn't yet understand who they were.
We're just talking,
said Dennis.
I just want to understand what happened to your brother. Believe me, I think his death was a tragedy.
He would never get it, I told them. He died fighting for what he believed in.
Defending others who took him for granted.
That's not true.
Oh?
Dennis gave me a lopsided smile.
Then why don't you work for the Guardians? You've killed Strigoi but have no promise, Mark. Not even a graduation mark, I heard.
Why aren't you out there throwing yourself in front of Moroi?
Dennis, said Nikolai uneasily. Please just leave.
I'm not talking to you, Kolya.
Dennis's eyes were still on me.
I'm just trying to figure Rose out. She kills Strigoi but doesn't work for the Guardians. She's clearly not like the rest of you soft people in this town. Maybe she's more like us.
She's nothing like you, Victoria snapped back. I got it then, and a chill ran down my spine. These were the kind of Dompierres that Mark had been talking about. The true, unpromised ones. The vigilantes who sought out Strigoi on their own. The ones who neither settled down nor answered to any Guardians. They shouldn't have unnerved me, not really. In some ways, Dennis was right. In the simplest terms, I really was like them. And yet, there was an air about these guys that just rubbed me the wrong way.
Then why are you in Russia?
Asked one of Dennis's friends. I already couldn't remember his name.
This is a long trip for you. You wouldn't have come here without a good reason.
Victoria was picking up her sister's anger.
She came to tell us about Dimka.
Dennis eyed me.
I think she's here to hunt Strigoi. There are more in Russia to choose from than there are in the States.
She wouldn't be in Baia if she was hunting Strigoi, you idiot, returned Victoria evenly. She'd be in Vladivostok or Novosibirsk or somewhere like that.
Novosibirsk? The name was familiar, but where had I heard it? A moment later, the answer came to me. Sydney had mentioned it. Novosibirsk was the largest city in Siberia. Dennis continued.
Maybe she's just passing through. Maybe she'll want to join us when we go to Novosibirsk tomorrow.
For God's sake, I exclaimed. I'm right here. Stop talking about me like I'm not. And why would I want to go with you? Dennis's eyes gleamed with an intense, feverish light.
Good hunting there. Lots of Strigoi. Come with us and you can help us go after them.
And how many of you will come back from this?
Karolina asked in a hard voice.
Where is Timosha? Where is Vasily? Your hunting party keeps getting smaller each time you return here. Which one of you will be next? Whose family will be the next to mourn?
Easy for you to talk,
retorted the friend, Lev, I think his name was.
You stay here and do nothing while we go out and keep you safe.
Karolina gave him a disgusted look and I recalled how she was dating a Guardian.
You go out and rush into situations without thinking. If you want to keep us safe, then stay here and defend your families when they need it. If you want to go after Strigoi, go join the Guardians and work with those who have some sense.
The Guardians don't hunt Strigoi,
cried Dennis.
They sit and wait and cower before the Moroi.
The unfortunate part was, he had a point, but not entirely. That's changing, I said. There's a movement to start taking the offensive against the Strigoi. There's also talk of the Moroi learning to fight with us. You could help be a part of that.
Like you are?
He laughed.
You still haven't told us why you're here and not with them.
You can say what you want to the rest of this group, but I know why you're here. I can see it in you.
The crazy, eerie look he gave me almost made me think that he could.
You know the only way to rid the world of evil is to do it on our own. To seek out the Strigoi ourselves and kill them one by one.
Without a plan, finished Karolina. Without any thought of the consequences.
We're strong and we know how to fight. That's all that we need to know when it comes to killing Strigoi.
And that was when I understood. I finally got what Mark had been trying to tell me. Dennis was saying exactly what I had been thinking since I left St. Vladimir's. I'd run off without a plan, wanting to throw myself into danger because I felt I had a mission that only I could carry out. Only I could kill Dmitri. Only I could destroy the evil within him. I'd been giving no thought to how I'd pull it off. Seeing as Dmitri had beat me more often than not in fights when he was still a Dompierre. With a Strigoi's strength and speed now, the odds were definitely against me. Still, I hadn't cared. I'd been obsessed, convinced I had to do this. In my own head, what I had to do made sense. But now, hearing those sentiments from Dennis, it sounded crazy. Just as reckless as Mark had warned. Their motives might be good, just as mine were, but they were also suicidal. Without Dimitri, I honestly hadn't cared much about my own life. I'd never been afraid to risk it before, but now I realized there was a big difference between dying uselessly and dying for a reason. If I died trying to kill Dimitri because I had no strategy, then my life would have meant nothing. Just then, the priest walked over and said something to us in Russian. From his tone and expression, I think he was asking if everything was okay. He'd mingled with the rest of the congregation after the service. Being human, he probably didn't know all the Dompierre politics afoot, but he could undoubtedly sense trouble. Dennis offered him a simpering smile and gave what sounded like a polite explanation. The priest smiled in return, nodded, and wandered off when someone else called to him.
"Enough," said Carolina harshly, once the priest was out of earshot. "You need to go, now."
Dennis's body tensed, and mine responded, ready for a fight. I thought he might start something then and there. A few seconds later, he relaxed and turned to me.
"Show them to me first."
"Show you what?" I asked.
"The marks. Show me how many Strigoi you killed."
I didn't respond right away, wondering if this was a trick. Everyone's eyes were on me. Turning slightly, I lifted the hair off the back of my neck and showed my tattoos. Little lightning-shaped Malnihe marks were there, along with the mark I'd gotten for the battle. From the sound of Dennis's gasp, I was guessing he'd never seen that many kills before. I let my hair go and met his gaze levelly.
"Anything else?" I asked.
"You're wasting your time," he said at last, gesturing to the people behind me. "With them, with this place, you should come with us to Novosibirsk. We'll help make your life worthwhile."
"I'm the only one who can make anything of my life," I pointed down the street. "You were asked to leave. Now go." I held my breath, still bracing for a fight. After several tense moments, the group retreated. Before turning around, Dennis gave me one last piercing look.
"This isn't what you want, and you know it. When you change your mind, come find us at 83 Kasakova. We leave at sunrise tomorrow."
"You'll be leaving without me," I said. Dennis's smile sent another chill down my spine.
"We'll see."
Chapter 14. The encounter with Dennis left me even more confused than before. It was a shocking illustration of Mark's warning, an omen of what I too might become if I wasn't careful. I wasn't really the same as Dennis, was I? I wasn't aimlessly seeking danger. I was seeking danger. Well, for a reason. I had to fulfill the promise I'd made to find Dimitri. Maybe it was suicidal, and I was only deluding myself into thinking it was noble. Victoria left me little opportunity to ruminate. Later that evening, as the family was settling down in the living room after way too much food, she glibly asked Elena,
"Can I go over to Marina's? She's having a party before we go back to school."
"Wow. It looked like Abe and the alchemists weren't the only ones keeping secrets around here." I glanced between Elena and Victoria's faces, curious as to how this would play out. Elena and Yeva were both knitting, but Yeva didn't look up. Victoria had spoken in English. Elena's face turned thoughtful.
"You have to leave early tomorrow to go back to school."
"I know, but I can sleep on the bus. Everyone else will be there tonight."
"Everyone else isn't a convincing argument," scoffed Elena.
"They'll all be tired tomorrow, too,"
replied Victoria, grinning.
"You'll miss your last night with Rose."
"I'll hang out with her after I get back."
"Great. And stay up even later."
"Not that late. I'll be back by 2.
"Absolutely not. You'll be back by midnight."
Elena returned to her knitting. But that had been permission if I'd ever heard it. Victoria looked at the clock. It was almost 8:30. Her face told me she wasn't happy about the curfew, but she apparently decided to take what she could get. Carolina gave us an odd look as we left the room but remained silent. Sonia and Paul, engrossed in TV, barely noticed our departure. I had to find out what was going on.
"Okay," I said once we were heading upstairs.
"What gives? I thought you weren't going to Marina's." Victoria grinned and beckoned me into her bedroom.
I'd recently learned her bedroom used to be Dimitri's, and every time I was in there, I had to resist the urge to go bury myself in the bed, even though I knew the sheets had been washed countless times since those days. Somehow I could imagine them smelling like Dimitri and feeling warm as though we were both lying there together.
"I'm not."
Victoria began rifling through her closet and pulled out a short, sleeveless red dress with lace around the straps. The fabric was stretchy, the kind that looked like it'd show everything. I was shocked when she began putting it on. It was pretty trashy.
"Is this a joke?"
"Nope." Victoria took off her shirt and jeans and pulled the dress on. She had no trouble with it, but it was every bit as clingy as it had appeared. She wasn't as filled out as I was on top, but in a dress like that, it didn't matter.
"Okay," I said, catching on at last. "What's his name?"
"Roland," she said. "Oh, Rose, he's amazing, and this is the last night I'll get to see him before school."
I didn't know whether to feel happy for her or sad for Nikolai. This Roland guy must have been the reason she couldn't give Nikolai the time of day. She was totally in love with someone else. Still, that dress.
"You must really like him,"
I observed dryly. Her eyes widened.
"Do you want to meet him?"
Well, I don't want to interfere with your date."
"You won't. Just stop by and say hi, okay?"
It felt pretty intrusive, yet at the same time, well, I was kind of curious about a guy who could get her to leave the house in that kind of outfit, particularly when she started applying really heavy makeup, extra dark eyeliner, and bright red lipstick. So I agreed to meet Roland, and we left the house as quietly as we could. Despite wearing a coat over her dress, Victoria still didn't want to run into her mother. We headed downtown, following a few twists and turns until we ended up behind what looked like an ordinary warehouse in an abandoned part of town. All was quiet, but a tall, tough-looking Dompierre stood by a door leading into the building, his arms crossed in front of him. Victoria brought us to a halt nearby, saying we had to wait there. A minute later, a group of Maroi men of mixed ages wandered up, chatting and laughing. The Dompierre gave them a once-over and then opened the door for them. Light and music spilled out until the door shut, and all went silent again.
"So this is by a secret Dompierre world," I murmured.
She didn't hear me because suddenly her face lit up.
"There he is!"
She pointed to two approaching guys. Both were Maroi.
Well, who knew? Victoria's secret boyfriend wasn't a Dompierre.
I guessed that wasn't too shocking, really, though the way she'd dressed tonight still bothered me. She gave him a fierce hug and introduced us. His friend was named Sergei, and he smiled politely before hurrying inside where he was apparently meeting a girl, too. I had to give Victoria credit. Roland was hot. His hair was dark auburn, soft and wavy. The green of his eyes reminded me painfully of Adrian's. And when he smiled at Victoria, it was dazzling. The look on her face was exactly like Nikolai's whenever he was around her. Roland took a hold of Victoria's hands and brought them to his lips, kissing each one. Those green, green eyes gazed at hers, and he murmured something I couldn't hear. She blushed and replied in Russian. I didn't need any translation to know the content was sexy and flirty. Still smiling, he glanced over at me, and although she'd introduced us, it was like he was noticing me for the first time, and was interested.
You're new here, aren't you?
He asked. Victoria wrapped her arms around him and rested her head on his chest.
Rose is visiting. She's a friend of the family.
Ah, he said. Now I remember hearing about you. I had no idea such a fierce Strogoi killer would be so beautiful.
It's part of the job description, I said dryly.
Will you be returning to school with Victoria?
He asked. No, I'll be staying here a little longer. I still had no clue, though, if a little longer was 1 hour or 1 year. He said thoughtfully. He looked back down at Victoria and pressed a kiss to her hair, running his fingers along her throat. His next words were to her.
I'm glad you were able to come here before you left. I don't know how I'll get by with you so far away.
She beamed.
There is no way I could leave without seeing you one more time.
She trailed off, too overcome with emotion, and as he leaned down, hands still on her throat, I thought for an awful moment that they were going to start making out then and there. Fortunately, the appearance of an approaching Dompierre girl interrupted them. Victoria broke from Roland and embraced the other girl. They apparently hadn't seen each other in a while and chatted rapidly in Russian, ignoring Roland and me. Free of her for a moment, he leaned toward me.
Once Victoria has returned to school, you'll be all alone here. Maybe I could show you around then.
Thanks, but I've already seen everything. He kept that big smile on.
Of course. Well, then perhaps we could simply get together and... talk.
I couldn't believe it. This guy had had his hands all over Victoria 30 seconds ago, and was now trying to score plans with me the instant she left town. I was disgusted, and had to restrain myself from doing something stupid. Sorry, but I don't think I'll be around long enough. I got the impression that women didn't refuse him very often. He frowned and started to protest, but Victoria returned and wrapped herself around him again. He studied me for several more puzzled seconds, and then shifted his attention to her, smiling and turning on the charm. She ate it all up, and while the two tried to include me in their conversation, it was clear they were totally absorbed in each other. Roland might be interested in me, but for now, she was an easier target, and one that wouldn't be available much longer. I felt that disgust roil up in me again. The longer we stood out there, the more I realized what was going on. All the people going inside were Maroi guys or Dompierre girls, and the girls were all dressed like Victoria. This was a blood whore den. Suddenly, by a secret Dompierre world held no appeal. I hated it. I wanted nothing more than to get out of here. No, wait. I wanted nothing more than to get out of here and drag Victoria away, even kicking and screaming. Roland was sleazy, no question, and I didn't want her anywhere near him. Yet it soon became clear they weren't going to stand out in the alley all night. They wanted to go inside and do God only knew what. Victoria, I said, trying to be reasonable, are you sure you don't want to come back home and hang out? I mean, I won't get to see you tomorrow. She hesitated, then shook her head.
I won't get to see Roland either, but I promise I'll come see you as soon as I get home later. We'll stay up all night. Mom will care.
I didn't know what other protests to make. Roland's impatience, now that I refused him, was starting to show. He wanted to go inside. I wondered what was there. A dance floor? Bedrooms? I probably could have gone with them, to see for myself, despite being underdressed. Or, well, overdressed, as far as amounts of clothing went. Yet I couldn't bring myself to do it. All my life, I'd been taught about blood whores and why their lifestyle was wrong. I didn't know if Victoria was becoming one, and I hoped she wasn't, but there was no way I could set foot in there. It was a matter of principle. I watched them go with a heavy heart, wondering what I'd just let my friend walk into. Seeing her in that ultra-tight dress, plastered all over him, suddenly made me reevaluate everything. How much of this peaceful life in Baia was a sham? Was Victoria, the girl who called me a sister, really not the person I thought she was? Confused, I turned away to head back home, and almost walked into Abe. Again. What the hell? I exclaimed. He wore a tuxedo tonight, complete with tails and a silvery silk scarf. Are you stalking me? Stupid question. Of course he was. I hoped his formal wear meant he wouldn't be dragging me off this evening. His guardians were equally well-dressed. Idly, I wondered if a place like this had something to do with his illegal business dealings. Was he trafficking blood whores? Like some kind of pimp? Unlikely, seeing as most of these girls didn't require much urging. Abe gave me that annoying, knowing smile of his.
I see your friend is off to an interesting night. I had no idea Victoria had such lovely legs. Not everyone knows, thanks to that dress.
I clenched my fists and leaned toward him. Don't you dare talk about her like that, old man.
I'm not saying anything that isn't obvious to everybody else. It'll certainly be obvious to young Roland soon.
You don't know anything about them. Yet I didn't believe my own words, not after seeing them walk off together. Abe, I could tell, knew what I was thinking.
These girls all say it won't happen to them, but it always does. It's what'll happen to you if you stay.
Oh, here we are, I said mockingly. I knew a threat had to be coming. The part where you order me again to leave the country or else bad, bad things will happen. He gestured toward the door, where Mormoroi and Dompierre's were going.
I don't even need to make anything bad happen. You'll do it on your own by staying here. You'll waste your life away running errands for Alena Belikova. Potlucks will become the most exciting thing in your world.
They're good people, I growled. Don't mock them.
Oh, I'm not denying that.
He straightened his silk scarf.
They are good people, but they aren't your people. This is a fantasy. You're deluding yourself.
He was all sternness now.
Your grief has sent you here. Your man was ripped away from you, and you've ripped yourself away from your old friends. You're trying to make up for it by convincing yourself that this is your family, that this is your home. They're not. This isn't.
I could make this my home. I still wasn't sure of that, but my stubborn nature made me want to contradict him.
You aren't meant for Baia,
he said, dark eyes blazing.
You're meant for better things. You need to go back home, back to your school, and the Dragomir princess.
How the hell do you know about her? Who are you? When are you going to tell me who you work for? What do you want with me? I had a feeling I was on the verge of hysterics. Hearing him refer to Lyssa snapped something inside of me.
I'm merely an observer who can tell you're wasting your time here. This is no life for you, Rose. Your life is back in the States. They say you are on track to be a great guardian. Do you know what an honor it is to be assigned to the last Dragomir? You could spend your life in elite powerful circles. The reputation you've already gained will raise you in status and regard. You have a stunning career ahead of you, and it's not too late to go back to it. Not yet.
Who are you to talk about how I should live my life? I've heard that your hands are bloody. Zmei, you're not exactly a good role model. What is it you're involved in anyway?
My own affairs. And it's exactly because of the life I lead that you should listen to me when I say abandon this path and go back home.
His words were urgent and authoritative, and I couldn't believe he had the audacity to talk to me like that. That's not my life anymore, I said icily. He gave a harsh laugh and gestured around us once more.
What, and this is? You want to go off and be a blood whore like your friend in there?
Don't call her that, I shouted. I don't care if you've got bodyguards or not. I will hurt you, old man, if you say anything else about Victoria. He didn't flinch at my explosion.
That was harsh, I admit. She's not a blood whore. Not yet. But she's one step away from it. As I said, it always happens in the end. Even if you aren't used by someone like Roland Kislyak. And believe me, he will use her. Just like he did her sister. You'll still end up alone with a baby you're way too young for.
Wait. I froze. Are you saying he's the guy who got Sonya pregnant? Why would Victoria be involved with him after he did that and left her sister?
Because she doesn't know. Sonya doesn't talk about it, and Mr. Kislyak thinks it's a game, getting two sisters into bed. Too bad for him that Carolina's smarter than the others, or he could have had them all. Who knows?
He gave me a sardonic smile.
Maybe he'll consider you part of the family enough to go after you next.
Like hell. I'd never get involved with anyone like that. I'm never going to be involved with anyone again. Not after Dimitri. Abe's sternness gave way to momentary amusement.
Oh, Rose, you are young. You've barely lived. Everyone thinks their first love is the only one they'll ever have.
This guy was really pissing me off, but I gained enough control to decide I wasn't going to punch him. At least I didn't think so. I backed up a little toward the building. I'm not going to play your game here, and you can tell whoever you're working for that I'm not playing theirs either, and I'm not going back. One way or another, whether it was to hunt Dimitri or live with his family, I was staying in Russia. You're going to have to box me up and ship me there. Not that I wanted to give Abe any ideas. I suspected he could do it if he wanted. Damn it. Who was behind this? Who would want to find me badly enough to send this guy after me? Weirder still, whoever it was someone who cared enough about me to attempt reason. If Abe had actually wanted to abduct me, he already would have. He could have done it the night he brought me to Baia. All he would have had to do was keep driving to the nearest airport. I eventually needed to figure this out, but first I needed to get away from Abe. I backed up further. I'm leaving, and you can't stop me. And don't spy on me anymore. This ends now. Abe studied me for several seconds, his dark eyes narrowed thoughtfully. I could practically see the wheels of plots and world domination spinning in his head. At last he said, so quietly I could hardly hear him, "It won't end with them, though."
"Who?"
He pointed at the door.
"Victoria and Roland."
"What are you getting at?"
"You know what I'm getting at. She thinks she's in love with him. He knows she'll be back in school tomorrow. Tonight's his last chance with her. And he won't waste it. There are lots of bedrooms in there. They're probably in one right now."
I tried to control my breathing. "Then I'll go tell her mother."
"It'll be too late. She'd never find him in time, and tomorrow, Victoria will be on her way to school. And he'll have no interest anymore. What can her mother do after the fact? Ground her?"
I was getting angry, largely because I had a feeling he was right. "Fine, then I'll drag her off myself."
"That'll never happen. She wants to do this. She won't leave with you. Even if she did, she'd just find him again."
I eyed him. "Enough. You're obviously hinting at something, so just get on with it." He smiled, apparently pleased at my astuteness, or maybe my bluntness.
"If you want to save her, you've got to go through him. Through Roland."
I scoffed. "Not likely. The only way he'd leave her alone is if I offered to take her place. And hey, friendship only went so far."
"Not if I talk to him."
"What are you gonna do? Give him a talk on morality and sway him with reason?"
"Oh, I'll sway him, all right. But believe me, I won't do it with reason. Well, at least not the kind you're thinking of. If I tell him to leave her alone, he'll leave her alone. For good."
I stepped backward without realizing it and hit the wall. Abe looked scary as hell. Zmay. I didn't doubt his words at all. He could get Roland to leave Victoria alone. In fact, he probably wouldn't even use his Dompierres. Abe could deliver enough terror, and probably a good punch, to make it happen. "Why would you do that for me?" I asked.
"As a sign of good faith. Promise to leave Baya, and I'll deal with him."
His eyes gleamed. Both of us could feel the net closing around me. "That's your tactic now? You're offering me a trade? My leaving isn't really worth you scaring some Maroi asshole." The net grew tighter.
"Isn't it, Rose?"
Frantically, I thought about what to do. Some part of me thought Victoria was free to make her own choices, to love whom she wanted. But I knew for a fact that Roland didn't love her. She was a conquest for him, as shown by his willingness to go after me. And Sonia, apparently. What would happen to Victoria? Would she become like the rest of the women here? Would she be the next Belikov to have a baby? Even if she had no intentions of becoming a guardian, this wasn't the right path for her. Carolina had declined to join the Guardians and now lived a respectable life with her kids and a job that, if not exciting, was steady and allowed her to keep her dignity. I couldn't let Victoria turn down a road that could ruin the rest of her life. I couldn't let that happen to Dimitri's sister. Dimitri. I knew him. I knew his protective nature. He would never let anything happen to those he cared about. I hated the thought of that blood whore den, but I still would have run in to get her. Because that was what Dimitri would have done. But I didn't know if I'd find her there in time. I knew, however, that Abe could, and that he could keep Roland away forever. And so, I spoke without fully understanding the consequences of my words. I'll leave Baya. Chapter 15. Abe glanced over at one of his guardians and gave a swift nod. The man instantly walked away.
"It's done,"
Abe said. "Just like that?" I asked in disbelief. His lips quirked into a smile.
"Roland knows who I am. He knows who works for me. Once Pavel makes my wishes known, that will be the end of it."
I shivered, knowing Abe spoke the truth. Considering what a smartass I'd been to Abe this whole time, it really was a wonder I hadn't had my feet set in cement and been tossed into the ocean. "So why aren't you forcefully dragging me out of here?"
I never like to make anyone do anything they don't want to. Even Roland. It's much easier if people simply see reason and do what I ask them to, without the use of force.
And by see reason, you mean blackmail, I said, thinking of what I'd just agreed to.
We made a trade, he said. That's all. Don't forget your end of the bargain. You promised to leave here, and you don't seem like the type to go back on your word.
I don't.
Rose!
Victoria suddenly appeared at the door. Wow, that was fast. Pavel was calmly dragging her by the arm. Her hair was mussed, and a dress strap was slipping from her shoulder. Her face was a mixture of incredulity and anger.
What did you do? That guy came and told Roland to get out of here and never see me again. And then Roland agreed. He just left.
I found it slightly funny that Victoria immediately blamed me for this. True, I was responsible, but Abe was standing right there. It wasn't a secret who his employees were. Nonetheless, I defended my actions. He was using you, I said. There were tears in Victoria's brown eyes.
He loves me.
If he loves you, then why did he hit on me as soon as your back was turned?
He did not.
He's the one who got Sonia pregnant. Even in the alley's dim lighting, I saw her face pale.
That's a lie.
I threw up my hands. Why would I make that up? He wanted to make plans with me as soon as you were out of town.
If he did, she said, voice shaking, it was because you led him on.
I gaped. Beside me, Abe listened quietly, a smug look on his face. He was so self-satisfied and probably thought he was being proven right. I wanted to punch him, but Victoria was my concern.
How can you think that? I'm your friend, I told her.
If you were my friend, you wouldn't be acting like this. You wouldn't try to stand in my way. You act like you loved my brother, but there's no way you could have. No way you really understand love.
Didn't understand love? Was she crazy? If she only knew what I'd sacrificed for Dimitri, what I'd done to be where I was now. All for love. She was the one who couldn't understand. Love wasn't a fling in a back room at a party. It was something you lived and died for. My emotions surged. That darkness welling up within me that made me want to lash out in return for her horrible accusation. It was only through the strongest of efforts that I remembered she was already hurting. That she only said the things she did because she was confused and upset. Victoria, I do understand, and I'm sorry. I'm only doing this because you're my friend. I care about you.
You aren't my friend, she hissed. You aren't part of this family. You don't understand anything about us or how we live. I wish you'd never come here.
She turned and stormed away, pushing back inside through the long line of partygoers. My heart ached as I watched her. I turned to Abe. She's going to go try to find him. He still wore that damnably knowing expression.
It won't matter. He'll have nothing to do with her anymore. Not if he values that pretty face of his.
I was worried for Victoria, but kind of had a feeling Abe was right about Roland. Roland would no longer be an issue. As for Victoria's next guy, well, that was a worry for another day. Fine, then we're done here. Do not follow me anymore, I growled.
Keep your promise to leave Baya and I won't have to.
I narrowed my eyes. I told you, I always keep my promises. And as I hurried back to the Belikov house, I suddenly wondered if that was true. The blowout with Abe and Victoria was like cold water on my face. What was I doing here? To a certain extent, Abe had been right. I had been deluding myself, pretending Dimitri's family was my own in order to soothe my grief over him. But they weren't. This wasn't home. The academy wasn't my home either. Not anymore. The only thing I had left was my promise. My promise to Dimitri. The promise I'd somehow lost sight of since coming here. Some of the Belikov family was in bed when I got home, but others were still in the living room. I slipped upstairs to my room, waiting anxiously for Victoria to get home. A half hour later, I heard footsteps on the stairs and the sound of her door closing. I knocked gently on it.
Victoria, I said in a loud whisper. It's me. Please talk to me.
No,
came the response.
I don't ever want to talk to you again.
Victoria, go away. I'm just worried about you.
You aren't my brother. You aren't even my sister. You have no place here.
Ouch. Her voice was muffled by the door. But I didn't want to risk a fight in the hall and let the others hear. Going to my room, my heart breaking, I stopped and stood in front of the mirror. It was then that I knew she was right. Even Abe was right. Baya wasn't my place. In a flash, my meager belongings were packed, but I hesitated before going downstairs. Victoria's closed door stared at me, and I had to fight the urge to knock again. If I did, it would only trigger another fight. Or, maybe even worse, she would forgive me, and then I would want to stay forever, lost in the comfort of Dimitri's family and their simple life. Taking a deep breath, I headed downstairs and walked out the front door. I wanted to tell the others goodbye, but worried the same thing would happen, that I'd look at their faces and change my mind. I needed to go, I realized. I was angry at both Victoria and Abe. Their words had hurt me, but there'd been truth in them. This wasn't my world. I had other things to do with my life, and I had a lot of promises to keep. When I was about 8 blocks away, I slowed down, not because I was tired, but because I wasn't sure where I was going. Leaving that house had been the biggest step. I sank down on the curb in front of a neighbor's silent, dark yard. I wanted to cry without knowing why. I wanted my old life back. I wanted Dimitri and Lissa. Oh, God, I wanted them. But Dimitri was gone, and the only way I'd see him was if I truly set out to kill him. And as for Lissa, she was more or less gone to me, too. Even if I survived this, I didn't think she could forgive me. Sitting there, feeling lost and alone, I tried reaching out to her one more time. I knew it was foolish, considering what I'd seen before, but I had to try one more time. I had to know if I really could have my old place back there. I slipped inside her mind instantly, my runaway emotions making the transition easy. She was on a private jet. If Jill had been stunned by meeting St. Vladimir's A-list students, going on a trip with them made her downright comatose. She stared at everything wide-eyed and barely said a word during the whole flight to the royal court. When Avery offered her a glass of champagne, Jill could barely stammer out,
No thanks.
After that, the others seemed to forget about her and got carried away by their own conversation. Lissa noticed Jill's uneasiness but didn't do much to remedy it. That was a shock. The Lissa I had known would have gone out of her way to make Jill comfortable and be included. Fortunately, the younger girl seemed perfectly entertained by watching the others' antics. I also took comfort in knowing Jill would be okay once she met up with Mia. Lissa had sent word ahead to Mia to come pick up Jill when they landed, seeing as Lissa and others had to attend to one of Tatiana's functions right away. Mia had said she'd take Jill under her wing for the weekend and show her some of the innovative things she'd learned to do with her water magic. Lissa was glad for this, happy she wouldn't be babysitting a freshman all weekend. Even if Jill was totally off of Lissa's radar, one person wasn't, Avery's brother Reed. Their father had decided it would be a good idea for Reed to go with them, and seeing as Headmaster Lazar had played a key role in working with Tatiana to arrange this trip, there was little argument. Avery had rolled her eyes and spoken to Lissa about it covertly just before boarding.
"We're all riding your reputation," Avery said. "Part of the reason Dad let me come was because you're in good with the Queen, and he wants it to rub off on me. He's then hoping I'll get in good with her, and then that'll rub off on Reed and the rest of the family."
Lissa tried not to overthink the logic too much. Mostly, she was bothered because Reed Lazar was still as unpleasant as he'd been the first day they met. He wasn't really mean or anything. It just made her uncomfortable being around him. Really, he was the polar opposite of Avery. Whereas she was animated and could always strike up conversation, he stayed tight-lipped and spoke only when spoken to. Lissa couldn't really tell if it was shyness or disdain. When Lissa had tried asking him if he was excited to go to court, Reed had simply shrugged.
"Whatever. I don't care."
His tone had been almost hostile, like he resented her for asking.
so she'd given up all other attempts at conversation. The only person, other than his sister, that Lissa saw Reed ever speak to was Avery's guardian, Simon. He'd also come along. When the flight landed, Mia was as good as her word. She waved enthusiastically when Lissa stepped off the plane, her blonde curls whipping around in the wind. Lissa grinned back, and they gave each other quick half-hugs, something that never failed to amuse me given their former enemy status. Lissa made introductions for those who needed them, as an escort of guardians led them away from the landing strip and toward the inner portion of court. Mia welcomed Jill so warmly that the younger girl's uneasiness faded, and excitement glowed in her green eyes. Smiling fondly, Mia glanced away from Jill and over to Lissa. "Where's Rose?" Silence fell, followed by uncomfortable glances. "What?" demanded Mia. "What did I say?" "Rose is gone," said Lissa. "Sorry, I thought you knew. She dropped out and left after the attack because there were some things, some personal things, she needed to take care of." Lissa feared Mia would ask about the personal things. Only a few people knew about my search for Dimitri, and Lissa wanted to keep it that way. Most thought I'd just disappeared from post-battle trauma. Mia's next question completely shocked Lissa. "Why didn't you go with her?" "What?" Lissa stammered. Why would I do that? Rose dropped out. No way am I going to." "Yeah, I suppose." Mia turned speculative. "You guys are just so close, even without the bond. I assume you'd follow each other to the ends of the earth and figure out the details later." Mia's own life had gone through so much upheaval that she took that kind of thing in stride. That weird, fluctuating anger I'd been feeling pop up in Lissa every so often suddenly reared its head and turned on Mia. "Yeah, well, if we were so close, then it seems like she wouldn't have left in the first place. She's the selfish one, not me." The words stung me and clearly shocked Mia. Mia had a temper of her own, but she sat on it and simply held up her hands in an apologetic way. She really had changed. "Sorry, wasn't trying to accuse you of anything." Lissa said nothing else. Since my departure, she'd beat herself up about a lot of things. She'd gone over and over things she could have done for me before or after the attack, things that might have made me stay. But it had never occurred to her to go with me, and the revelation hit her like a smack to the face. Mia's words made her feel guilty and angry all at the same time, and she wasn't sure who she was the maddest at, me or herself.
"I know what you're thinking," said Adrian a few minutes later, once Mia had led Jill away and promised to meet up later.
"What, you read minds now?" asked Lissa.
"Don't have to. It's written all over your face. And Rose never would have let you go with her. So stop agonizing over it."
They entered the royal guest housing, which was just as lush and opulent as it had been when I'd stayed there. "You don't know that. I could have talked her into it."
"No," said Adrian sharply. "You couldn't have. I'm serious. Don't give yourself one more thing to be depressed about."
"Hey, who said I'm depressed? Like I said, she abandoned me." Adrian was surprised. Since my departure, Lissa had been more sad than anything. She'd occasionally been angry at my decision, but neither Adrian nor I had seen such vehemence from her. Dark feelings boiled within her heart.
"I thought you understood," said Adrian with a small, puzzled frown. "I thought you said you'd..."
Avery suddenly interrupted, giving Adrian a sharp look.
Hey, leave her alone, okay? We'll see you at the reception."
They were at a point where the groups had to split, girls going to one part of the lodging and guys to the other. Adrian looked like he wanted to say more, but instead he nodded and headed off with Reed and a couple of guardians. Avery put a gentle arm around Lissa as she glared at Adrian's retreating figure.
"You okay?"
Avery's normally laughing face was filled with concern. It startled Lissa in the same way Adrian's moments of seriousness always startled me.
"I guess... I don't know." "Don't beat yourself up over what you could have or should have done. The past is gone. Move on to the future."
Lissa's heart was still heavy, her mood blacker than it had been in quite a while. She managed a tight smile.
"I think that's the wisest thing you've ever said.
I know, can you believe it? Do you think it'll impress Adrian?
They dissolved into laughter, yet despite her cheery exterior, Lissa was still struck by Mia's offhand comment.